Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome back to another edition of the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we hear about another terrorist attack in Nigeria. Officials fear Boko Haram rebels are getting stronger. Then, we will examine events that are taking place during the holiest week in the Christian calendar. We are here to help you 7 days a week on the internet, on radio, and on television. And we talk about things that are important for all of us to understand. The show is called As It Is. Nigeria experienced another deadly terror attack Monday. Police said a bombing killed at least 71 people at a bus station close to the capital, Abuja. Experts say the most recent attack appears to be a sign that the Islamist rebels of Boko Haram have expanded their operations in Nigeria. Taxi driver Joseph Suleiman was driving into Abuja shortly before 7 o'clock in the morning local time when the bomb exploded.
We were inside the car. We heard a bomb blast. And my car was shaking. Everybody, we were totally confused.
Totally confused. Abuja, Nigeria's capital, has not had a bomb attack in 2 years. At that time, Boko Haram targeted a media group, killing several people. In 2011, more than 60 people were killed in Abuja in attacks that targeted the local United Nations headquarters and a Christian church. Mr. Suleiman says he saw many badly injured people as he passed a bus station. He said people in the area told him that Boko Haram had exploded a car bomb. Some officials say the Boko Haram rebellion is growing. The group is mainly active in 3 northeastern Nigerian states. The area is under emergency rule. Member of Parliament Herman Hembe says the government has been spending huge amounts of money on security, but he does not think things are getting better.
I don't see any improvement. It's just been getting worse.
I don't see any improvement. It's just been getting worse. Boko Haram has been blamed for thousands of deaths since the rebellion began in 2009. Amnesty International says 1,500 people have been killed in attacks this year. The group says about 500,000 have fled their homes. Boko Haram says it wants to destroy the government. The group also wants to enforce its version of Islamic law. Many observers partly blame the rebellion on extreme poverty. They say unemployment drives young men to fight for Boko Haram for small amounts of money. Pastor Eyo Oritsajafor is president of the Christian Association of Nigeria. He says the rebellion is the result of religious extremism, although poverty does drive some to join the group.
It's about ideology, it's not poverty, it's not marginalization. Yes, it is true that when you deal with poverty, you may reduce the number of recruits, people that they can recruit.
The only way to end the rebellion, says the pastor, is to fight the extremism through education and religious leadership in mostly Muslim northern states. The Nigerian military says it has forced back Boko Haram fighters and reclaimed many areas once held by the rebels. The military also says Boko Haram attempted to gain new members by leading a huge prisoner escape last month. Security forces killed hundreds of detainees fleeing the prison. Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the prisoner escape. It also has threatened more violence. The group has not claimed responsibility for the latest bomb attack, however. Boko Haram often communicates with the public through video messages, which can take days or weeks to be released. Christians around the world are observing Holy Week. It is the most important and serious holiday time in the Christian religion. It begins with what many Christians call Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday observes the day Christians believe Jesus entered the city of Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. The following Sunday is Easter, the day Christians believe Christ came back to life after execution on the cross. Katie Weaver tells us more.
Those are the bells of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. It stands in the place where Christians say Jesus died on the cross and was buried. On Sunday, the church was crowded with worshipers waving palm leaves. They represent the palm leaves that the crowd spread in front of Jesus as he rode on a donkey into Jerusalem. At the time, that was a traditional way to welcome and honor an important person. The worshippers Sunday also called out, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." Christians believe the people of ancient Jerusalem also did this as Christ arrived in the city. Visitors came from around the world this year as in years past. Miriam Akin traveled from Nigeria.
Oh, I feel great. I feel awesome. I feel elated. And I give all the glory to God for bringing us to this awesome place.
Another worshiper, Jane Reynolds, came from the southern U.S. state of Georgia. She said the experience brings the Christian holy book, the Bible, to life.
This is where Jesus actually went down that hill into the city. It just is amazing to me to think I'm in the same spot and to think that it really happened and that it's not just black and white on the pages.
In Vatican City on Palm Sunday, Pope Francis gave a service for thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square. The Roman Catholic Church leader decided against using the homily, or speech, he had prepared for the service. In his talk, he discussed the people around Jesus in the days before his execution and return. The Pope asked, "Where is my heart, and which of these persons am I most like?" After the service, Pope Francis went into the crowd. He joined some of those gathered to have his photograph taken. Later this week, Christians will observe Good Friday, the day Jesus was believed to have died on the cross. Holy Week ends on Saturday. That is the day Christians believe Jesus' body lay in its burial place. Sunday begins Easter week in the Christian religious tradition. Easter is the day Christians believe Jesus woke from death and left his burial tomb. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for spending some time with us today. This is VOA.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. In the United States, we love to try new ways to exercise. And when an exercise program promises to help us lose weight or get fit, it can become very popular very quickly. It becomes an exercise trend. One such popular exercise trend is CrossFit. The number of CrossFit centers, or gyms, has doubled every 2 years, and not just in the United States. What began in a house in California back in the 1970s is now international. There are more than 8,500 CrossFit gyms worldwide. People who practice CrossFit live in South America, across Europe, and Asia too. But what is CrossFit? CrossFit is a whole body workout, and it is not easy. CrossFit is known as one of the hardest training programs in the exercise world. A good word to describe that is hardcore. So who are these hardcore CrossFitters? They include the U.S. Marines, professional sports teams, fire departments, and police forces. But it is also popular with office workers. CrossFit uses weight training and basic movements like running and jumping. The movements are simple but intense. Kate Garufi is a trainer at District CrossFit in Washington, D.C. She says the main goals are to get stronger and to improve cardio, or the rate the heart performs.
So you can have powerlifting movements, you can have Olympic lifting movements, you can have body weight stuff, we can have what we call single modal, running, rowing, swimming. Anything can be thrown into a workout with CrossFit.
Most CrossFit gyms are filled with men, but women also practice this extreme workout. Samantha Raposa has been doing CrossFit for about 6 weeks with the goals of losing weight and gaining strength.
I think there's so many things that I didn't know I could do, and you know, there's so much, I'm already making progress that I didn't expect to make as quickly as I made it. So I think I'm going to have to revise my goals a little bit.
Something else is different about CrossFit. People train together in groups. CrossFit members say they begin to feel like a family. There is also pressure as a result. Members say they do not want to fail their group. But critics say CrossFit has a high rate of injury. Members can experience muscle damage, especially shoulder injuries. CrossFit athletes, however, say that a good trainer can help people work out safely and avoid injuries. And that's the Health Report from VOA Learning English. For video reports about health, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Steve Ember. And I'm Barbara Klein with Explorations in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about a large national park established to protect the culture of ancient Native Americans. It is called Mesa Verde.
It was cold that day in 1888 in southwestern Colorado. Richard Wetherill and his brother-in-law were trying to find some missing cattle. They were up on Mesa Verde. Spanish explorers had named the area. The high, flat mountaintop is covered with many green juniper and pinyon pine trees. It looks like a huge green table, which is Mesa Verde in Spanish. The two men came to the edge of a deep canyon. Through the falling snow, they saw what looked like a small city across the canyon. It was suspended in the middle of the rock wall. There were many connected rooms built into a natural opening in the rock. They named the ruins Cliff Palace. In the next few days, they found two more large ruins. They named one Spruce Tree House. They named the other Square Tower House.
A number of other people had seen and taken pictures of some of the cliff dwellings earlier, but the Wetherill family was the first group to study them. Soon after his discovery, Richard Wetherill returned to Mesa Verde to the ruins that had remained silent and untouched for centuries. Richard Wetherill collected many objects. It was an easy task. It looked as if the people who had lived there had just walked away, leaving everything they owned. Cooking pots by the fireplaces, food bowls on the floors, shoes in the corners, sticks for digging by the doors. The ruins in Colorado had been home to the ancestors of the present-day members of the Pueblo tribes. They were named Anasazi, or Ancient Ones, by the Navajo Indians. They moved to Mesa Verde about 1,500 years ago and left 700 years ago. They built the cliff dwellings in Mesa Verde toward the end of the 800 years they lived there.
Richard Wetherill showed his collection of objects in nearby towns. People were not interested. Just some more old Indian things, they said. Finally, he sold his collection to the Colorado Historical Society. But the Wetherill family continued exploring Mesa Verde. Their finds became known in the eastern United States and in Europe. Hundreds of people went to Mesa Verde to see for themselves.
One of the earliest visitors was a young man from Sweden, Gustav Nordenskiöld. Mr. Nordenskiöld spent months exploring the area. He traveled on foot and horseback. He took pictures that were published in a book, The Cliff Dwellers of the Mesa Verde. Gustav Nordenskiöld collected hundreds of objects he found in the ruins. He loaded them on teams of mules and sent them to the nearby town of Durango, Colorado. Local officials tried to prevent him from removing so many objects, but there were no laws to stop him. Mr. Nordenskiöld shipped the objects to Sweden. Later, they were given to the National Museum in Helsinki, Finland, where they remain today.
Many people were shocked by the continuing removal of objects from the ruins at Mesa Verde. One was a woman named Virginia McClurg. She had visited the area and had explored a few small ruins. From 1887 to 1896, she campaigned throughout the country to get laws to save the cliff dwellings. She gave speeches describing the destruction of the dwellings by people seeking treasures. She worked for years with members of the United States Congress to get such laws passed. Finally, on June 29, 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt signed a bill creating Mesa Verde National Park. It was the first national park designed to protect the works of humans. Then Congress approved the Federal Antiquities Act of 1906. The act helps protect ancient ruins on federal lands.
Today, from a distance, Mesa Verde appears as it did centuries ago. It rises more than 540 meters above the floor of the valley. Visitors can drive up to the top of Mesa Verde on a winding mountain road. When you reach the top, you are 2,400 meters above sea level. In the distance are the flat lands and mountains of the Four Corners area. That is where the western states of Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona meet. This area has one of the largest numbers of archaeological sites in the United States.
Within the national park are more than 5,000 ruins from the time of the ancestral Puebloan people. 600 are cliff dwellings. Most of the ruins remain unexplored. Some have been uncovered and supported to make them safe to visit. These ruins are open to the public during most of the year. During the winter, activities are limited. The visitor's center at the park is open during the summer. The museum is open all year. The visitor's center and the museum provide information about the history of the culture of the ancient Pueblo people and about present-day Indians. National Park Service guides lead visitors to the ruins. They give talks about the cultural history of the area, and they talk about the geology and wildlife.
Some of the ruins in the Four Corners area are from the earliest people who lived there. They were hunters and gatherers, now known as basket makers. The basket makers lived in simple caves. Their civilization existed 2,000 years ago. The first evidence that ancient people had moved to Mesa Verde is from about the year 500. Those people lived in pit houses. Pit houses were large holes in the ground with roofs of wood and mud. In about the year 750, the early Pueblo people began building square structures of large connected rooms, or pueblos, above ground. Finally, in about 1100, they climbed down the canyon walls and began building cliff dwellings. Today, visitors to Mesa Verde can see some of the remains of all four kinds of settlements.
Thank you. Cliff Palace is the largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde and also in North America. It has 150 rooms. It is difficult to get to it. Visitors must climb down into the canyon on a narrow path with many steps. They must also climb down several ladders. But the trip is well worth the effort. Visitors can examine a huge and beautiful structure made of stone and clay. Spruce Tree House is the third largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde National Park. It has 114 rooms. It also has 8 underground rooms called kivas. The Indian men gathered in the kivas for special ceremonies. About 100 people lived in this cliff dwelling during the 13th century. Spruce Tree House is the easiest cliff dwelling to visit. The path curves down into the valley and then up to the ruin. Signs along the path point to trees and plants used by the ancestral Puebloan people. Also along the path are the juniper and pinyon pine trees that make Mesa Verde green.
About 500,000 people visit Mesa Verde National Park each year. The park's archaeologists have recovered many objects that the ancient Pueblo people used, including pots, tools, and jewelry. Many of the objects are shown in the visitors' center. However, human remains or any object from a grave may not be touched or shown. This is to honor the wishes of the modern Puebloan people who live in the area today. Mesa Verde National Park occupies 21,000 hectares of land. However, only about 10% of the area has been explored.
Mesa Verde is recognized as a special place. The United Nations named it one of the first World Heritage Sites in 1978. Special events were held at Mesa Verde during its 100th anniversary in 2006. They included tours of areas never before open to the public. Today's Pueblo Indians, whose ancestors lived in Mesa Verde, consider it a sacred place. And for visitors from around the world, it remains a place of mystery and beauty.
This program was written by Marilyn Cristiano and Shelley Gollist. It was produced by Mario Ritter. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.